For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. Welcome, everyone. This week is the Haftorah for Parsha Shekalim, which is it's actually a month late. The special holidays preceding Pesach, the four holidays, four special Shabbos readings. And the first of them is Shekalim. And in this year it's a leap year, so it gets pushed off for a month. And also when it's not a leap year, you have a lot of double parshas, but when it's a leap year, you have single parshas. So there is a little bit of a change in the Torah reading. Shekalim is it's the first parsha. It's very interesting. The very first thing is about community. It's about being part of a group. Everybody gives together to support the creation of the tabernacle, and every person gives a half, and they signify that they alone are half, but they're part of a greater whole. That's the half shekel that was given. And therefore, the Haftorah is going to be about the upkeep of the temple, of the Beis HaMikdash, which is it's collectively, as a group, we all belong. And there is a very strong concept that we're a member of the Jewish people. That we're not just ourselves alone, but we're part of Klal Yisrael. We're part of the. We don't see ourselves when there's like bad news on the other side of the world where somebody's injured or hurt. If they're from our people, we cry. It hurts us. It's the most shocking thing in the world to wake up to a terrible headline from somewhere else in the world or to on the other hand, when there's good news, we don't have to know the person. If there's somebody that's, we're just thrilled for them. We're just happy because we're all one people. One of the things that created our sense of peoplehood was being in Egypt together, which was like suffering together through slavery. But it's more than that. It's the idea that our souls are connected, that we're all... and we don't always get along like all peoples, like all family. That doesn't take away the sense of caring and the sense of being together with everybody else in the service of Hashem. We're all part of that same Klal Yisrael, and that's reflected in the Shekalim. Now, the Shekalim, this is in Kings. In order to begin the story, you have to kind of know the rest of the story. It's an amazing story. You couldn't make this up. What happened was that there was a terribly wicked lady named Jezebel, and Ahav somehow picked her as a queen because he wanted to make peace with the neighboring countries that were around him. And she was an idolater, and she was also a murderer. And once, even though Ahav was a very great king, she ran the place. She ran him. And when Ahav was around, we had last week, when he was around Elijah, he would go along with Elijah. When he was around Jezebel, he did whatever she wanted, and he murdered, hundreds of people because of his wife. She was a foreign, a pagan, and she had a very bad influence on him. The tribe of Yehuda was the smaller tribe, the smaller country, and they were more loyal to Hashem, and they were more pious and religious than the northern country. And it always hurt the Jewish people that we were split. We take it from now, we live on the Vista Road, where there's every synagogue has a breakaway. There's Beth Jacob has Young Israel, and Young Israel has New Toko, and Ner Mizrach, they also have a breakaway. Like every shul has like another group that's split away. And on the one hand, it's a sign that we're all very big and everybody has their special kind of flavor of synagogue that they like. But it's sad to us that we can't... can't be connected together. We're Klal Yisrael, and hopefully there are still things that we still view ourselves as one community. When the two tribes broke up, it was basically Yehuda and Yosef again. They're very strong personalities and very great leaders. And in fact, we have a tradition that when Mashiach comes, we'll have a Mashiach ben David and a Mashiach ben Yosef. But they'll make peace. They'll work together. But these two personalities were very strong, Yehuda and Yosef. And from the very beginning, they didn't get along. You know, they sold Yosef as a slave because they couldn't, what's this guy telling everybody what to do, you know? And then they made up, and then they got, you know. Our history has been up and down with Yehuda and Yosef. But it was a very difficult thing for us to be separate people. And the tribe of Yehuda, because they loved peace and because they wanted to find a way to get back together, accepted a shidduch offer from Ahav and Jezebel. There's the debate if it was the child of Jezebel or if it was the child of one of the other wives. And so the king of Yehuda married a wife, took a wife from the daughter of Jezebel, or at least from Ahav, was the daughter, a princess from the ten tribes, thinking, now we'll finally get back together. You make a shidduch together, we'll be one happy family. But it didn't work that way. And instead, what happened was, this king eventually got killed in battle, his wife, who was the descendant of Jezebel, wiped out every other descendant, basically her grandchildren, all her male grandchildren, so that she would rule the country. And it's very unusual because it's not a Jewish way. Like one of the reasons when Rabin was assassinated, it shocked us. It's not the way Jews handle. I mean, we might fight with each other constantly, but we don't kill each other. I mean, that's just not. Unfortunately, whenever that's happened in our history, it was always really bad. You know, like that was. Our tradition is that Esav was the one that was bloody. But Jews settle things with their mouth. You know, if they have a problem with somebody, they'll talk to them, they'll yell at them, whatever. But they don't kill each other. I mean, you know, this is not us. And that's not the power of Yaakov. That's not the way we handle things. We talk. We don't, you know, we don't get violent. That's not, and if ever it happens, it's very shocking and very, it's a troubling sign that if it happens in the Jewish people. So, she went and she decided she wanted to rule by killing out all the male descendants of the house of David. And now, one of the problems of that is that means we'll never have the Mashiach, because we believe that the quality of David was so unique that he was able to, even after people have sinned, he was able to bring them back. And he was able to lead the people in a very unique way. In the book of Tehillim, that's the approach of King David. And therefore, he's the one who will be the Mashiach. That even Jews that are very far and very distant, it'll be the descendant of King David who will bring everybody back. And if he were wiped out, we don't know. We don't know how we would get. We believe that we need somebody from that house of David, from that power of David, from that Mashiach ben David. And she wiped out every living descendant. She poisoned the grandchildren. And there's a tradition that it's not clear if it was her daughter or her niece. She saw what was going on, and she snuck away one of the babies to save their life. I don't know how she hit him. I don't know how she got him. And she didn't have anywhere to hide, so she ran to the temple, the Beis HaMikdash, and she gave the Kohen Gadol the baby. So what was he going to do? Where was he going to hide a baby? So he went to the Holy of Holies. Nobody goes there except on Yom Kippur. Great place to hide a baby. And he raised in secret the Kohanim. You know, they had lots of food over there. They had meat. They had, they had flour, cake offerings. I don't know if they had baby bottles. I don't know how they did it exactly. Could be. I don't know how old. But they raised this child in secret, the last descendant of the house of David, in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Holy of Holies, in the very holy areas when he was 7 years old, they brought him out and they declared him king, and they did away with this lady who was the descendant of Jezebel. That was the, and this king in front of us, this is the, his name is Yehoyada. That's who we're going to be introduced to. And he was the king that was, from the early age, he was raised in the temple. He was, very special kid. I mean, being raised with, just being, imagine being raised in the temple, you know, being raised in the holy place. And as long as his mentors, Kohanim and the other people were alive, he was a good king. At one point in his life, he went a little sour. And it's interesting, many great people have this happen to them. It goes to their head. People were starting to say, it says that only the holiest Jew alive, the Kohen Gadol, can only go there once a year on the holiest day of the year, And you were there for years in the Holy of Holies, and they started to worship him. And they said, "You're such a great king, you're like David, and you're like a Kohen, and you're..." And unfortunately, there are people that will do that. This is a challenge for great people. They got other people around them who just compliment them and praise them. And if a person's not careful, it can go to their head. There's a famous story that the Rothschild used to have that problem. They say that... Hello, welcome. They say that he had a coffin put into his basement. And at the end of the day, he would sometimes go down and just look at that coffin to humble himself a little bit. You know, when you're surrounded by people who just... This is why we worry about people like Trump and other, you know, when people who are around you who just say, "You're the greatest, you're amazing, you're awesome, you're a brilliant boss," you know, and sometimes they just can't... They just don't know how to deal with that, and it goes to their head. And so people were saying that, "Oh, yeah, we're going to see that he was an amazing king, and he was raised in the Holy of Holies, and he had the advantages of a king and a priest, and he was, and after coming from, you know, the child and running it from a very early age, but there was a time when it went to his head." And that's always something that when a person is very successful, they have to be careful with, to always stay humble, always. You know, when Hashem blesses a person, to just appreciate it, or if a person feels that they're able to accomplish things, they should thank Hashem for it, but not allow it to go to their head. And the greatest people we have were all praised for their humility, which is very interesting. Like, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, David HaMelech, Avram Avinu, each one of them said, "I'm nothing. You know, what am I? You know, Hashem gives me His blessings." And that actually makes it hard for me to be impartial about somebody like Trump, or even assuming that, again, rabbis aren't political, but it just goes against our grain to have somebody brag, you know, to have somebody, again, our society is very, they all brag, they all say they're the greatest, they all say, but it's not our way. Again, we feel that if a person is blessed by Hashem, then it came from Hashem. It didn't come from me. What do I have to brag about? The more a person is blessed with, the more humble they need to be, because look what Hashem gave them. Hashem gave them the ability to do these things, right? So that's the way a person would look at it. We're going to see, like I said, he was challenged in later years, but he was only challenged because he really was great, this Yehoyada. And we're going to see part of greatness is to be able to see a situation that's not working and to fix it, which is a very good quality. Everybody can just go with the flow and keep things the same day in, day out. But when you see there's a problem and it needs to get fixed, and to do something about it, that's amazing. Then you make a difference in life. If you're able to... Now, there are always going to be people who aren't going to like it, you know, when you try to fix things. And we're going to see. So let's see what happens over here. Ben Sheva Shanim Yoash B'malcho, at 7 years old, he was the king. I think they call, what do they call it, a regent when a person starts as a king? He took over, as we mentioned, a very unusual circumstance, and from his wicked grandmother, who was descended from Jezebel, and he was the last descendant of the house of David. B'shnas Sheva Liyehu Melech Yoash. And he was during the same reign of Yehu, who was the king in the 10 tribes. Rabban Shana Melech Yerushalayim, and he was king for 40 years. Now, who was his mother? Sivya Miber Sheva. It's interesting. You always mention the mother with the kings, because the mother was the... For Jewish people, it's the mother. Mother is the great influence on a person's life. Like we, you know, mother's always the big hero. You know, the kings, you know, sometimes you could argue the father maybe is busy running the country, and the kings had lots of kids. And if the person was great, it was because of his mother. But that's not a secret to us. We all know that. But the people that are something special in life, it's because of what the mother, you know. It could be the father did it too, but it makes always special mention of the mother. And his mother's name was Svia. The word Svia comes from the word deer. Like a deer is like a... we have many things in nature, the great qualities of nature it's a kosher animal, the deer. And she was from Beersheba. Verse 3, V'yas Yoash Yosher B'nei Hashem. And this king, Yoash, he started at 7 years old, 40 years, a long time. He did what was good and straight. Yasher for us, the best praise of somebody is Yasher. Yasher means like straight, not crooked. Not Yasher is like just right. The fact that the most famous Jewish ethical book is called Mesilas Yesharim, The Straight Path. Because when something is right, it's straight. It's a clear, like, you know, it's not crooked, it's yashar. In modern Hebrew, they use that also, if you want to say, like, you know, go straight. Yashar, yashar, yashar. You know, that word yashar means, like, straight. He was yashar. The only thing is, he was yashar as long as he had his mentor, Hashir Yoyada Kohen. And he was the Kohen who had taken care of him in the temple. There's a debate if he was the Kohen Gadol or not the Kohen Gadol. Whoever he was a great Kohen. Now, the only thing that he had a challenge with, almost all the kings of the House of David had a challenge with, and that, this is what we call the grandfather clause. Every rabbi has this problem, every kashrus agency. There are certain things, when you do them brand new, you can do them 100%. But when you come, and there are things that have been going on for many years, it's much more difficult to make changes because they're grandfathered in. They were done this way before. They were there in my father's time. They were there in my grandfather's time. I'm going to change it. So at one time, before the temple stood, people had these private backyard altars where they would offer sacrifices to Hashem. And when we didn't have one central place to get close to Hashem, each person did their own little private backyard bama. They had these little, and that was fine. But then once, and in the previous times, those people who were very dedicated, were very proud of their little private backyard, you know, bama, that's fine, it was wonderful. But once we had a central place where everybody came together, it wasn't right anymore to have your private backyard altar. But the kings were very reluctant to get rid of them. And, you know, sometimes a person isn't feeling so well, I can't make it to the temple, let me just bring something over here. They wanted to do it at home. And it was very difficult to get rid of these. When the people would get a little bit funny, they would use them for idols. And it was very difficult to control. In other words, if a person has his own little backyard bama, his own little backyard thing, if all of a sudden he wants to worship the sun or he wants to worship the moon, he just goes to the back and brings an offering to the moon. There was no control over it. In the Beis HaMikdash, you couldn't do that. So these little backyard, some people call them shtiblach, like little synagogues that they had in the backyard that he didn't get rid of. Even though he was a very great king, that was because they had done it for years, and at one time they remembered growing up, and they used to do it all alone, you know. And at that time, perhaps it was okay, but once we had the Beis HaMikdash, it wasn't appropriate, but he didn't get rid of them. People still had these little backyard altars where they would offer offerings, and they... again, once we have a communal thing, it's the best way to do it is to be part of the community. Verse 5, V'yomer Yoash el Kohanim. Now, Yoash noticed, we're going to see that the temple was needed to be refurbished. He needed to do the first building campaign. He's very interesting, you know, this is the king that came up with the pushka. You know, everybody knows the Jews have a pushka, you know, a place where it came from over here. This is the source of it. It was his idea. He's the world's greatest fundraiser, we're going to see. Any idea how many, you know, great buildings have been built? Judaism stayed alive because of the pushka. It was the idea that it wasn't just like, you know, the rich people are going to give. It was that it's really the idea of shkolim, which is that when everybody, the rich and the poor, and everybody wants to contribute, then we thrive. When everybody gives what they can give. It doesn't have to be big money. It doesn't have, even the pennies that they give, because everybody is part of this. That's the idea of Shkolim. That's going to be his idea. But he didn't get there so quickly. The first thing he noticed, we're going to see, the temple was hundreds of years old. And I thought about this also. You know, when you offer, when you have a lot of fire, smoke, it starts to, it wears things down. It needs to be refurbished. If you have a lot of smoke and a lot of heat and a lot of fire, and things are, you know, they're not going to last forever. And considering that we still have some of the stones from the temple, that's pretty good. You know, like the, you know, buildings come and they go, but this is, you know. But let's see what happens. So he said, the Kohanim kol hakesef hakodshim asher yuvah beis Hashem. When people bring the money to the house of Hashem, over ish kesef nefashos erko kohesher yala al lev ish lahavi. And this also we have in the Parsha. Hashem wanted the donations from people who in their hearts want to do it. We don't want to take money against people who don't want to give. It has to be on a person's heart that a person wants to. His heart motivates him to bring it to Hashem's house. Yikul lehem, verse 6, let the Kohanim take it. Ish meis macho, let everybody get from the people who they know. Vehei mexiku es bedek abayis. Let everybody accept donations. We'll start the campaign. We're gonna fix up the house. L'kol asher yimse shambara. And wherever needs to be done, you'll figure out how to spend the money. You know, there are plenty of things that need to be fixed. Once you start, you know, to mend things and to fix things, that's what's gonna happen. So this was his first try to get the campaign going. Verse 6. It didn't work. So it's a debate about what happened. It seems like he was asking the Kohanim to collect the money. And the Kohanim, collecting money is never fun. It's not an easy job. And some people just are not going to, you know, ask people for money. It's just, I guess when certain people are good at it, it makes it seem like it's easy, but it's not easy. It's not a fun job to call someone up and ask them to, you know, collect funds and do things. And this just was not a successful campaign. Now, it's very interesting. These were the same people that saved him as a child, but he wasn't afraid to scold them, so to speak, or to ask them to get something done. You have to be willing to you know, you can't just say, well, you know, these people took care of me, or he was saying, he says, Madua Einka Maxik Mesbetakabais. He said, how come you guys aren't getting the building fund going? What's the matter? We can't allow Hashem's house to be falling in disrepair. Va'ata tiku kesa mesa mekrain. How come you didn't collect the money? Kilabetakabais itnu. And so the Yasuo Kohanim ability cause Kesem Ace to Am, the ability cause his better kabais. So they decided not to do that anymore. They were gonna try a different system. Apparently it wasn't organized well enough. But again, you have to credit people that try. Whenever you try, there'll be people who give you a hard time, but it's the people that try to do things, that's how things get done. And it doesn't matter that it won't work on the first time. Maybe the next time you have an idea, it'll work. But that's part of life. So this was his idea. He takes this big box and he makes the hole. And they put one next to the altar on the right so that when people come in to bring offerings, they'll put money in the pushka, right? That's how it started. V'nosu shem makonim shem esaf, it's called kesev. And all of this money would be used for this purpose. Verse 11, Miki Roski Rava Kesef, when they saw that the box was starting to fill up, Vayal Sofer HaMelech, they'll get apparently they had the king who was probably the accountant over there, you know, in charge of the, you gotta keep track of the money, Vakoin Gadol, and get the big coin. Now, it's also important, this was transparent, you know, you had the king and the Koin Gadol, everybody was there to make sure the funds, you know, were counted and were used for the right things, Yunus the Kesef, and they would count the money. And then, verse 12, it's very interesting. We're going to see that they gave the money to the workers, and they trusted the workers to take the right amount. Today, that wouldn't work. But these people were people who needed money for supplies and things, but they were working with their heart. So they gave the funds to the people. There were carpenters, livnososim, beis Hashem, alagodrim, and there were people that built fences and people that cut stone to buy stone and wood. Lachazik is better, beis Hashem, to fix the house of Hashem. Lekol asher yetzel by to strengthen it all. Verse 14. Ach lo yasa. That was from this fund was really for the building. Now there was different funds for the actual things that were used in the service. Those were the basins and the trumpets and the chatzuk lizav, gold and silver, minakesem. That was from the other funds. Kila osa malacha yitnu. They would give these funds to the people that were building the house. The chiskuba was beis Hashem, and they strengthened the house of Hashem. There is a concept, again, it's very difficult to know when do you trust somebody and when you don't. You know, sometimes if a person wants to work with their heart, you can't have somebody standing over them and ask, what do you do with this and what do you do with that? And a person doesn't feel like giving because someone's standing over him and what, you know, and asking for. So he knew, apparently they hired workers who were really just wanted to help. And they fully trusted them to only get the materials that they felt were needed from the funds. On the other hand, sometimes if you just fully trust people, they take advantage of you. So it's interesting. You have to have that dual way of dealing with people, that with some people who are donating their time and trying to be helpful, you can't be too demanding. You got to be nice. And then with sometimes you have to take care of, be responsible with the money of the temple and not allow it to go lost. You have to have that combination. And sometimes people don't know how to divide the two. And sometimes people get very insulted and very hurt. You know, they're donating, somebody asks them, what'd you do with this? What'd you do with that? You know, like, can't you see that they're putting hours and hours into, you know, their time? You're showing you don't trust them. And who are you? You know, but this was, so at the same time he was making sure that the project got done, they showed a certain trust to the people that they would do it right. Verse 15, they didn't make them give an exact accounting key. They were working in good faith. I think that's really the secret. Like, you have to have people that are working in, you know, like, in good faith. They're working in amuna. You know, they're working in, how does he say, they acted with integrity. If you have people that are acting with integrity, you don't have to... they could trust him that they did it. Kesef Ashram, Kesef Chatos, Lo Yuba Beis Hashem. Now, there was money that was left over from the offerings that was used for the Kohanim. That was a different fund. So that's the first part of the Haftorah. And again, a few things just to review, because it's relatively short. But number one... there's the idea that a person want those things that are used for holy purposes. You use your best. You want it to be nice, and if they're broken, you fix it. And you have to, you know, the king noticed that the house of Hashem needed strengthening. That, and therefore and that's when a person. Usually people worry about their own things. They worry about how they look. They worry about their car. They worry about their house. And when a person worries about Hashem's house, that's a special thing, to be thinking about Hashem. In other words, how does Hashem look? How does Hashem's house look? How are we going to appeal to people if it's broken? It needs fixing. It doesn't. The second thing was that if the first plan doesn't work, a lot of people, if things don't work the way they want, they give up. They just, that's it, I'm done. What do you mean you're done? We're not done. We're alive. We're alive. We keep on trying. You know, that's... The David HaMelech said that Tzaddik falls seven times, and then he figured, you know, you can sometimes, have you ever done something for seven times, you try it, and on the eighth time you get it right? Like, that's not it didn't work. The first campaign didn't go. So, all right, he'll do the next campaign, and he came up with a pushka. And they took money from people that wanted to do it. They focused on the positive, on the people that wanted the house of Hashem to be rebuilt and to be done correctly. And again, that's part of the theme of the parsha of building the house of Hashem, and people that want to donate and to use it right. Now, what was the house of Hashem? It really, Hashem is everywhere, but we need to. At certain times and places, especially when we come together as a people, we can feel Hashem's presence in a more intense way. And that comes partially because you go someplace special to try to get close to Hashem. That's why going to shul is so effective. You can pray at home. And it's interesting, he mentions here that as great as this king was, he still let people have their little home backyard prayer places for their little backyard. He couldn't stop that. But the idea that we come together as a people, and that makes it special when we all come together, you know, come as a minyan, come as a group, come as a community, and that makes the tefillah special. Okay, that's the...
So how was he as a king?
As his mentor was alive, until it went to his head. Then he was good.
Did it take long?
I have to check the exact. Most of the king time he was king, he was good. But
who followed him? Did he have a child?
Yes. He was kind of towards the middle end. There were several other kings afterwards. And
my other question: we're Jewish by way of the mother, mm-hmm. So we assume that Yizibel, that she converted, and therefore her daughter was Jewish. So now this king is Jewish.
That's an important question. That's a good question. In ancient times, When a woman married a man, she always took his custom, his religion. Even amongst non-Jews, it was always that way. The same way, like, she took his last name, and it was. But for a king, it was unheard of. I was even reading when women married the Russian czars, they gave up on their old form of Christianity and they adopted the new. It was always that. It was always assumed when a woman married a man that she would take his religion and his form of serving whatever that was. And certainly that was true in ancient times. So she had agreed to accept Judaism and give up idolatry and do. But apparently it didn't take long for it to. It didn't take. So there is a question: what happens if somebody converts? And they say they're going to be Jewish, and they don't really, did they really mean it at the time, or did they, and that's, they are Jewish, or did they never really mean it? They were thinking, I'll do this to get a nice Jewish husband, and I'll still be able to do everything on the side. So that's a matter of great debate.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.